Okay, today we are beginning Parshas Vayigash. And if you go through the Psukim, there's many, many questions about the... Yosef asks his brothers to come down to the land of Mitzrayim. So there's a number of issues that we have over here. That are difficult to understand, specifically with the wagons that were brought. So let's take a look at, I'm going to throw about 7 to 8 questions over here. And we're going to see there's a big, big inyan going on over here. So we start with the first pasuk, where Yosef, after he reveals himself to the brothers, he says, "But now do not be sad, and let it not trouble you that you sold me here. Why? For it was to preserve life that God sent me before you." Okay, Hashem sent me really to save your lives. And he talks a little bit more. And then he says, "And God sent me before you to make for you a remnant in the land and to preserve it for you and for a great deliverance." So the commentaries note that he seems to be repeating himself. He first says that Hashem sent me here, he says, to preserve life. In other words, to save your lives, because there was a great hunger, and because of the great hunger, you would have all died. And therefore, again, in Hebrew, Hashem sent me to save your lives, because there's a great hunger, and now there's food for you to eat. But then a pasuk or two later, he says, he says it twice. So why is he repeating himself? This is the question of the Alshach. Okay? That's the question of the Alshach. Second question. So he's saying, you're all going to come down here. You're going to all come down to Mitzrayim to be with me. So he says in Pasuk Beis, where are you in the second source, where are you going to live? You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me. You and your children, your grandchildren, and your flocks, and your cattle, and all that is yours. So he says, come down to Goshen, you'll be very close to me. So the commentaries ask, they're not going to be close to him. Goshen is not, Yosef's the king, the viceroy. He's in the middle of Egypt. He's in the capital, in the central part near the Nile River, wherever the capital is. However, Goshen is much closer to the Yamsuf. So they're not close to him. So why is he saying you'll be close to me? Second question. Third question. The brothers go back and they tell Yaakov that Yosef's alive, but he really can't believe it. Until we see in source 3, and they told him all of Yosef's words that he had said to them, and he saw the wagons that Yosef had sent to carry him, and the spirit of their father Yaakov was revived. So it seems that Yaakov's spirit was not revived until he saw the wagons, that Yosef sent wagons to bring back Yaakov. So when he saw the wagons, that revived him. They said he's alive and this didn't revive him. He's the leader, didn't revive him. Nothing revived him until he saw the wagons, and the Torah says that Yosef had sent. So why did that revive him? So Rashi gives an answer. Good answer. Rashi says that Yosef was sending a hint to his father that the word wagon in Hebrew is an agala, and it sounds like the word egla, which is a calf. And when Yaakov was walking Yosef to go to see his brothers, he escorted him a little bit, and they were learning Torah. And the last thing in the Torah that they learned was the story of the Egla Rufa, the calf whose neck is split. Various laws that relate to that. So when he sent back wagons that has the same word of Agala, so it sounds like Egla, so it showed Yaakov that Yosef didn't forget the Torah he learned with him 22 years ago. So if you remember that Torah, then that would show that... he was still very frum and a good boy, and therefore his soul was revived. The fact that Yosef would be alive would not make Yaakov feel any better if he assimilated. The fact that Yaakov, he said he was the viceroy, he's so successful. How could he be religious if he's so successful? Hey, he probably married a shiksa. He has something to do with Yiddish guy. What's to be happy about? But when he saw, he brought back the wagons. Oh, that showed him he didn't forget his Torah. It's a very nice shot, but it's got a lot of difficulties with it. Number one, isn't it a bit of a stretch that you have a wagon? You know, I mean, what else is he supposed to send but wagons? He's sending wagons so his father can go back in a wagon. So even if he forgot all his Torah, he'd send back a wagon. He's saying, well, it just says wagon, and wagon sounds like a calf. It's a bit of a stretch. But more so, there's another problem. Who really sent the wagons? Seems from this pasuk, Yosef sent the wagon. Well, let's see. Let's look in the fourth source. And Yaakov arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Yisrael carried their father Yaakov and their young children, their wives, in the wagons Paro had sent to carry him. Torah says, Paro sent the wagons. And they took their livestock and their possessions that they acquired in the land of Canaan. So now, why is the Torah on the one hand say that he saw the wagons that Yosef sent, but then when they go down, it says, and then when the wagons that Paro sent. Now, who sent the wagons? Was it Paro or was it Yosef? Now, earlier Pesukim, clearly, look in source 5. You see a little earlier where Paro indeed gives the order. Look in source 5. And Paro said to Yosef, tell your brothers, do this. Load up your beasts. They came with camels. Rashi says, with grain. And go enter the land of Canaan and take your father and your households and come to me. And I will give you the best of the land of Egypt. And you will eat at the fat of the land. And you have been commanded to tell them, do this. Take yourselves wagons from the land of Egypt for your young children, for your wives. You shall carry your father and come. Paro gave the instruction for the wagons. And the Torah even says it later on, that they went to the wagons of Paro sent. So then how can we now say that when Yaakov saw the wagons that Yosef said, they were the same wagons, they weren't different wagons. So how are they Yosef's wagons at all? Interesting point. So we're trying to understand whose wagons is going on over here. It's also another interesting observation. Paro said, do this, load up your beasts with grain. Now let's try to remember exactly what was going on in the story in the last week's Parsha. If you recall, when the brothers came the second time to Egypt, and Yosef tells them to leave, that's when he hid the goblet, his goblet, in Binyamin's sack. So what did they exactly do? Well, these guys didn't know anything that this was Yosef yet. So what happened? They came to get grain. So all the brothers were loaded up with grain. Now, they didn't know this was Yosef. They did not want to go back to Egypt very soon. They probably took tremendous amounts of grain because it's probably for the next 3-4 months. Right? So huge amounts of grain. Okay. So, and they're all going to go back to Canaan and stay there for many, many months. But instead, Yosef calls them back right away. And they all come back. He gets the goblet, accuses them of stealing the goblet, blah, blah, blah. Then he tells them who he is. And now it's time to go back. So load up your beasts with grain. Now, which grain is it? Well, it's the grain that they already have. But here's the question. What's Paro saying? Go back and get your father and come back right away to Egypt. Come back right away. So why is he giving them so much grain? 3-4 months worth of grain. Why is he giving them so much grain? Just give them for a week. It seems that all the grain they had is still on the animals. Didn't come off of the animals. So it seems he's giving them all the grain that was from before. So why is he doing all that? Just give a little bit of grain. Why so much grain? It's an interesting question. And Rashi himself says, load up your beasts. Rashi says, with grain. Well, what else besides grain? Must be Rashi saying, well, all that initial grain. That's so much grain. But why do they need that much grain? It's a very interesting question we'll have to analyze. Let's move on. Source number 6. Okay, the brothers come, and Yosef gives the brother instructions. They're going to meet Paro, and he gives instructions what they should say to Paro. Source number 6. Yosef said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go and tell Paro, and I will say to my brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. The men are shepherds, for they were always owners of livestock and their flocks and their cattle and all they have had brought. And if it comes to pass that Paro calls you and asks, what is your occupation? Yosef, this is what you shall say. Your servants have been owners of livestock from our youth until now, both we and our ancestors. They may dwell in the land of Goshen because all shepherds are parents of the Egyptians. So tell them that you're shepherds because Egyptians don't like shepherds and you'll stay in Goshen. Fine. So you're going to tell, if I ask you, what's your profession? Right? You say, this is your profession. But why do you got to say we and our ancestors? He says, if I'll ask you, what's your occupation? Say you're shepherds. Why do you have to say who your ancestors were also shepherds? Why do we need to know that as well? That's another interesting question. And then finally, when Yaakov saw the wagons, we said his heart was revived. So Rav Levi Yisrael Berdichev, this is a very interesting thing that is hard to understand, and that's going to be the basis of the class today. Source 7, Rav Levi Yisrael says, and he saw the wagons that had sent. Yosef hinted to Yaakov. Now remember, on the one hand, Yaakov's happy to hear his son's alive. On the other hand, he's going out to Mitzrayim. Now that's like really not a good place to go. So Yosef hinted to Yaakov that he should not worry about the exile because all of this is the eventual cause of redemption, as bad always leads to good. Now, agalot, wagons, comes from the word igul, a circle, as the cause of something is always circular. The cause of something is always circular. So the question is, what does Rav Levi Yitzchak mean to say that the cause of something is always circular? That's what we want to understand. So to begin to explain all these issues, so the real issue over here that the focal point is, whose wagons were they? Were they Paro's wagons? Were they Yosef's wagons? Whose wagons were they, and why is the Torah making such a big deal telling us whose they may be? So it's interesting, if you look in the Zohar, in source number 9, you find something fascinating. He says, the wagons that Yosef sent were from the side of holiness, while the wagons that Paro sent were from the side of impurity. Okay, we got to understand, what does that mean as well? What does that mean as well? Like, I don't get it. Were there two wagons, or was there one wagon? Well, you don't need twice as many wagons to get the job done. Either they, whatever, how many wagons they needed? Let's say they needed 10 wagons. Fine. Paro said, okay, I give an order to send 10 wagons. So if they only need 10 wagons, they send 10 wagons. So what's Yosef going to do? Send another 10 wagons? So what's the Zohar trying to get at over here? So the Shvilei Pinchas explains this concept of the wagons. Now, what do you know about a wagon? How does a wagon work? Well, a wagon is a very good modes of transportation those days because it had wheels. And the wheels of the wagon enable the wagon to move forward. Right? And this is all very symbolic of the way that Hashem runs the world. Because what does Hashem do? He turns, as we say, the wheels of nature, right? Which the way Hashem runs the world is like a wagon moving ahead. As you see in source number 9, Pirkei Avos says, everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, he only created for his glory. Okay, so let's think a little bit more. What else do you know about a wagon? A wagon can't go from place to place unless there's somebody leading the wagon. There's a wagon driver, right? And to bring people from one place to another, right? The idea of a wagon is to transport with a goal. Here's where people are, point A, we got to get them to point B. So this is the same thing. Hashem, so to speak, makes the world roll forward to get the world to a destination. So that's the way the world is. It's this wagon, as it were. And this is something that Avraham Avinu came to his own realization. And this is what the Rambam says in source number 10 at the beginning of Hilchos Yesod HaTorah. He says, what's the most important thing we need to know? Look in source 10. The foundation of all foundations and the pillar, it should be of all wisdom, not all of, but of all wisdom, is to know that there's a primary being who brought into being all existence. All the beings of the heavens, the earth, and what is between them came into existence only from the truth of his being. This being is the God of the world and the Lord of the entire earth. He controls the universe with infinite and bounded power. Here's the important line now. The power continues without interruption because the universe is constantly revolving. And it's impossible for it to revolve without someone causing it to revolve. That is Hashem, who causes it to revolve without a hand or any other corporeal dimension. The knowledge of this concept is a positive commandment, as it says, I am Hashem, your God. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So it's a positive commandment to know that Hashem makes the wagon wheels move. Hashem makes the world move. Nothing exists in this world without Hashem making it move. So now, whenever you're hearing this idea of wagons, so to speak, this is what is being hinted to when we see wagons. Let's take it a step further. There's a wagon, and there's also another type of vehicle that moves on wheels that was very much in those days. And what was that? Not a car. They had wagons in those days, and
the graining,
to transport people in wagons and chariots.
Oh, chariot.
Merkava.
Okay, chariot.
A chariot. So it's interesting what we see from the great Kabbalist, the Megala Amukos. And look what he says over here. It is known that Mashiach comes, source 11. He says the chariot will be complete. We know in the prophecies of Yechezkel, the great prophets, they had these great mystical prophecies of the Maisa Merkava, the chariot, and beyond what we can understand what's going on over there. But on a simple example, idea, we say when Mashiach comes, the chariot will be complete. And look what it's called. It's called the Merkava Shlema, the perfect chariot. It's got four wheels to it. Now, it's interesting, the gematria of Merkava Shlema, which is 652, is the same gematria of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Oh, and you know what? Typo, and David fell out there. Sorry. There's another word that's supposed to be there, very important. All right, I'll have to fix it up. Okay, you have Avram, Yitzchak, David. And why those four? Because those four, they represent the four wheels of the chariot. So when Mashiach comes, the Mashiach ben David will come, the chariot will be totally complete, the four wheels will be operating properly, and that's what we want. When we're in Golus, though, where impurity reigns, we have what we call Merkavat Tmeya, an impure chariot, which is the same Gematria 322 as Baal Tzafon. What was Baal Tzafon? That was the last remaining idol in Egypt. Or Kelev Ra, a bad dog, which mystically is a really terrible thing. This chariot has a Kelev Ra engraved on it. In other words, there is a holy chariot, the complete chariot, and not the complete chariot, the opposite of that. So what's the Ma'agala Muka saying? He's saying, really explaining the Zohar, explaining the Rambam, and is saying the following, that what was our job of the patriarchs? What were the patriarchs? The patriarchs were called the Merkava. Avram was called the Merkava. Yisro is called a Merkava. Why are they a chariot? Because again, a chariot, the job of a chariot is to move a person from point A to point B. What were the patriarchs busy doing? They were bringing the reality of God into the world and moving it all around the world. They're making the whole world realize that there's a God who runs the world. And there's a holy God that everything that happens in this world has a chariot, as it were. And when Mashiach comes, the job will be complete. The whole world will know that there's a God who moves all the wheels, as it were, and that will be the Merkava Shlema. And that was the goal. The goal is to bring God's the understanding of God's reality, that He is the one that controls everything in the world, and He's moving the whole world to a destination. Everything rotates around that. That's the Merkava Shlema. On the other hand, we have the Merkava Tmeya. The Merkava Tmeya. Remember, whatever Hashem creates good in this world has been equal and opposite force to that in the world. So who represents the beginning of the opposite of that force? That's Paro. As what did Paro say in Source 12 when Moshe came to tell that the Jews should go out? Paro said, who is Hashem that I should heed His voice to send out Israel? I do not know Hashem. So Paro is the opposite. He is saying that there is no God who makes it move. What makes it move is a regular nature. Nature moves by itself. Those who can control nature. I am wealthy. I've got the Nile River. I can use nature and I can control nature. There's no God control nature. So these are the competing forces over here. You've got the Merkava Shlema, that the patriarchs are trying to create this reality. Everybody knows that Hashem is behind everything. And God Parah says, no, 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 there is no Hashem that's behind everything. Now, it's interesting. We always read Parshas Vayigash always after, at the end of Hanukkah. Like we just read Hanukkah, when Shabbos Parsha Vayigash is almost always the end of Hanukkah. Last Shabbos, by Mincha, we read Vayigash. It still left us a little bit of Hanukkah. But Vayigash is the end. It's the bookend of Hanukkah. So you see why this is going to fit in very nicely. Take a look at the Sfas Emes. What he says in source 13, I'll take you to the next page. And really, the Greeks just took over Paro's job. He says, when the evil kingdom rose up to make them forget their Torah, what do they want them to forget mainly? And this is ideas we've mentioned in the past few weeks. We'll just take this a step further. The Greeks had the natural sciences. And this type of wisdom leads a person to forget the role of the Creator in his divine providence. That's what regular scientists do. They don't. They say there is the nature that does it by itself without any hand behind that. The purpose of the Jewish people is to testify that it's really God that's directing all of nature. Now look, very interesting. Next page. Yavan has the gematria of 66. Yud is 10. Vav is 6. Nun is 50. Gematria 66. Now, what's the gematria of Galgal, a wheel? Gimel is 3. Lamed is 30. Gimel is 3. Lamed is 66. So the Greeks were experts in the Galgalim, in the astrology. Yeah, but Galgal is also a wheel. But in truth, all the so they believed the stars and all the concepts, they went by themselves. They went by themselves. But the Rambam says, no, they don't go by themselves. But in truth, all of the constellations are being turned by Hashem. As it says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I'm Hashem, your God. Now Elokecha is Gematria 66. Just like Galgal, which is 66. Which is also the same Gematria, when you say Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, it's, what are you supposed to think about Hashem's name? Hoya, he was, Hove, he is, V'yihyeh, and will be, which is also Gematria of 66. Yeah. Look at all these 66s over here. You got wheels, Greeks, Elokecha, your God, and Yud Kei Vav Kei, that tells us Hoyahovavia is all 66. So you see what's happening over here. When we say Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God, which means Elokecha, Gematria 66, which means, and I'm the one that makes everything happen in this world, and I bring everything to its conclusion it's supposed to be at. Well, the Greek says, we're Yavan, we're 66. And we're the ones who can are astronomers, and we can explain how everything rotates and revolves and all this stuff. And that's just natural. It's no God. And that's the great competition. That's what the Greeks were trying to say. There is no God behind all of this. And therefore, that was the fight between the Greeks. Okay. So this is this understanding of the two different types of Merkavas. This is what the Zohar means when the Zohar said earlier in source number 8. Well, we'll get to him in a minute. But this is the idea of the Megala Mukas, when we're saying that the Merkava Shlema, when Mashiach comes, the whole world will understand that Hashem is running the show. The Merkava Tmeya, it says, no, that things are moving and spinning and this and that. But it's not Hashem, it's something altogether different. Okay. So now we got to take things, if you have this idea, now we have to take it a step further now. What is the natural conclusion of this? The natural conclusion of this is, well, why is it that Yaakov and the Jewish people had to go down to Egypt? Why did that happen? It was just, was it just, well, the brothers got in a fight, and they sold Yosef down to Egypt, and Yosef was fortunate, he was able to be successful. Then there was a hunger, and the brothers had to go down for food, and he happened to have food, and now they're reunited, and now Yaakov can go down to Egypt and spend his last years of his life with his son Yaakov, and that's just how things happen to work out. No, that's not at all what was going on. The commentaries tell us, and the Malbim explains this back in Parshas Vayeshev, they all say, for the Jews to receive the Torah at Sinai, it would require a certain pathway. And that's what Hashem told Avram at the covenant between the parts. Your children will be strangers for 400 years. They'll be in the land, they'll be strangers, and they will be, and at the end of that time, there'll be terrible, terrible sufferings. This is all part of the master plan. This was all part of, if you want to be the chosen people, you want to get the Torah, you want to bring a purpose for this world, which will be demonstrated how? By Hashem has to one time show the whole world what he can do. It's not going to happen if the Jews are living peacefully in Israel and they don't need anything.
That's right.
It's only going to happen when they're in the worst possible situation, under the control of the most powerful country in the world, and Hashem goes and takes them out. And by taking them out and then giving them the Torah at Sinai, and more than that, that's only part of it. But all the Jews themselves have to go through this great suffering, which has all kinds of reasons beyond just the people themselves, but mystical reasons for all the souls that have not been corrected from the beginning of time. There's all kinds of reasons beyond what we can ever understand. But one thing we know, and Hashem kept saying it over, I told it to Avram, and even in Sefer Dvarim, source 14, if you look what it says in source 14, it's when Hashem goes back in history, he says, but Hashem has taken you and withdrawn you from the iron crucible, the Kor HaBarzel. That's like a smelting pot from Egypt as a heritage for him to as this very day. And Rashi explains that a smelting pot is something that refines things. So the Jews had to be refined in Egypt through the suffering in Egypt for reasons that are way beyond what we can understand. They had to be refined. So therefore, there was a good reason why we had to go down to Egypt. And that's why the whole story of Yosef and the brothers came out. Because if you look at the story, it's so weird. So many things had to happen for this to work out the way it worked out. And Hashem was pulling the strings, how there should be miscommunication between Yosef and his brothers, and how Yaakov doesn't do such a good job raising his sons, and he can't give any peace between the two of them. Yaakov was good at everything. Until he comes back home to Israel at age 99, he succeeded everything he did. All of a sudden, he's a miserable failure. He can't make sure the kids get along. How can it be the kids can't get along? So the Malbim says, you know what? Since this was something that had to be, and this was not a family that it should be, Hashem had to do a lot of things to make it happen. You know, Yaakov said, listen, I'm in Israel, let me just learn Torah and be calm the rest of my life. And Hashem says, no, it can't be this way, because there's a lot more that still has to happen. And for it to get really good, it's got to get worse first. This is all part of the plan. You want to be the chosen people and change the world and bring Mashiach and all these things? Well, there's going to have to be a Torah at Sinai given, and there's going to have to be things before that, and you're going to have to be in a foreign land, and you're going to have to suffer. It's all part of the plan that's over there. And that was such a difficult thing that would take, for this to bring it to this point, would require a lot to happen. Now, so we have to ask a person, so where does the first stage of this redemption really happen? All this good stuff has to have a first stage. And what's the first stage? Going down to Egypt. If we did not go down to Egypt, we would never have been a people who could receive the Torah. We could never be a people who would bring Mashiach one day. The reason why we're going to have a redemption is because there's got to be certain suffering that has to be beforehand. And the truth of the matter is, not very many people understand this idea. Yosef, he understood this perfectly. Yosef, I guess when you go through 22 years in Egypt, and he saw how successful he was able to get through all this, he understood in his personal life, he was just, making the bridge, blazing the trail for the entire Jewish people to do the same thing. So he understood that there's got to be this bad time, apparently bad time, but really the only way the good is going to happen if this happens first. So it's not really even bad. It just looks bad. Who wants to be a slave in Egypt? Looks bad. But Yaakov, Yosef saw himself. He was a servant in Potiphar's house for a year. That wasn't any fun. He was in a jail for 12 years. But then he saw in one minute when he was taken out to explain the dream, that all that had to happen for him to be the viceroy. So he really was the first one of the Jewish people to live through such an experience. To have to go through such terrible, terrible things, but that was all preparing him to be the viceroy and for amazing things to happen. And he knew that this was going to continue, that what he did first blazed the trail for his brothers and the Jewish people who were going to sit in Egypt for a long time. And it looks bad, but it's only the beginning. And this is a very important... So now what Yosef desperately wants to do is he wants to give his father chizuk. Because Yaakov very reluctantly did not want to go down to Egypt. And even if he go down, he said, I'll just go down for a visit and go back. And Hashem says to Yaakov, no, you have to stay. And Yaakov says, what do I don't want to stay here. He says, no, you have to stay. And he's getting very big chalishus. He's feeling very depressed. He said, what do you mean? I don't want to be in Egypt. It's a terrible place. He said, no, you got to be here. So Yosef knows that his father's not going to want to be down for long. And therefore he has to find a way to encourage him. And now we're going to see shortly how the wagons come into the picture. But first we have to add one more point from the Das Tfunas. It's such a fundamental. Das Tfunas was written by who? Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato. It's a more difficult book. Everyone knows Masil Shasharim. Derech Hashem. Das Tfunas is a little bit more, you have to think more. There's a very important rule the Das Tfunas says. Look in 15. In truth, you will see that in actions as well, there's no evil in this world. The first thing that he says, there's no such thing as real evil in this world. Except in sections of the matter before it has reached its completion. The only time you'll find evil is before something is completely finished. There is no thing that has reached its conclusion that is evil. When something comes to the end, it's never bad. In other words, things may look bad, but nothing is ever bad. But it could be bad if you... till it reaches the conclusion. This is because we know that a Kodesh Baruch Hu only does that which is completely good. That which appears lacking in any aspect is only so because it's missing that which will bring it to its conclusion. Eventually it will be completed by some other thing that will make it whole and good. In other words, when these things are happening, and to our eyes, it looks bad. There's only one explanation. He says, there can't be anything bad in God's world. Anything bad. But right now, it's bad. It's not finished. You know, you go to a great artist, and you tell him to paint an amazing picture. You know, the artist will tell you, don't look till I'm finished. What they say, you don't show a nar a halba arbit. You don't show a fool a half job. Because at least a half job. Says, what'd you do? You went and you broke the whole house down. Let's say you're renovating a house. What do you have to do to renovate it? You knock down all the walls. Oh, you destroy. Wait, just wait. Good. If only by breaking the walls can I make the house bigger. It's going to be an amazing house, but it looks bad. Guy says, stop. You're ready. I don't like it already. Get out of here. I'm not interested. What do you mean? We're not finished. We're not finished. So therefore, that's what Das Tfunas is saying. He's saying there's nothing bad. The only time anything ever appears to be bad is if you don't wait for it to get finished. If it doesn't get finished, then you got problems. They got major problems. Let's take this step, the famous story you all know in Source 16, the story of Rabbi Akiva. We'll just briefly go it over. Rabbi Akiva would always tell people, whatever Hashem does, he does for the good. He always would say that. And we know the famous story that he was once traveling, remember, where he has the rooster, he has the candle, he has the donkey, you all know the story. And as he's traveling along the way, he wants to stop off in a village, and nobody lets him stay by his place overnight. Everything Hashem does is for the good. Oh, you have to sleep in the fields? Doesn't matter. It's okay. It's great. And then what happens, one after another, the donkey gets killed, rooster gets killed, the light goes out, he's in the dark all by himself. Every time he says, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good. Then what happened, the middle of the night, he hears screams going from the village. Seems some enemy soldiers came and killed every Jew that was there. They were walking through the fields. Since there was no rooster, and there was no candle, and there was no donkey, they didn't know Rabbi Akiva was hiding in the fields, and the next morning he was alive.
Wow.
But now let's come to the end of the story. Now the last line is problematic a little bit. 16. So then Rabbi Akiva said to them after the story, did I not tell you that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is for the good? Had the candle been burning and the donkey and the rooster been making noise, they would have captured me as well. Now, the problem with the story is it's like, it seems like Rabbi Akiva is like rubbing it in. Saying, see, I was told you. What do you have to rub it in for? So the commentaries say an amazing idea. They say the following. What Rabbi Akiva was saying is, number one, everything Hashem does, he does for the good. But what you have to do is you have to know that and believe that even while the things are not appearing to be good. That when, and that's what he would keep saying. He wouldn't say everything Hashem does for the best at the end of the story. He would say everything Hashem does best in the middle of the story. So when he doesn't get a place to sleep, he says, wow, that's the best news I could ever have heard. Because Hashem doesn't know anything bad for me. And when the donkey gets killed, that's the best news I ever heard. Etc., etc. All those things. Why? Why is this? So if you look at source 17, the Shvili Pinchas explains all this. You have to understand that when there is certain judgments in the world, Hashem wants things to work out good. But sometimes he has to make it go through a difficult place. But what he's doing now is amazingly good. So when there's a certain, let's say, judgment in the world, and things don't look so well, and what is Hashem asking from us? He's saying, I want you to see the story the way it is. Things are looking bad. Now do me a favor, don't think it's bad. Don't even spend a minute thinking it's bad. I want you right now to know it's good. And therefore he says in Source 17, it's specifically the person's belief and trust that Hashem will spin this action towards a positive conclusion which causes him to do so. In other words, part of the mechanism is while Hashem is spinning and making things happen, we have to believe and know confidently that Hashem is making it good right now. And it's that emuna which keeps things spinning the way it's supposed to spin. And when Jews are saying this is bad, that breaks the wheels. As if you're taking the chariot, it's going through a bad place, and now you're saying, oh, this is terrible. It's terrible? Okay, then I'll stop. But what happens when Hashem stops when you say it's terrible? It means he leaves in the middle of the road. He leaves in the middle of the road. You know, that's what one of the rabbis gives an analogy, again, to a fellow who was a poor man, a real hick, and he came into millions of dollars. He said, now that I have lots of money, I want to build the most fancy, most amazing house. And he hires these guys, I want you to buy the most expensive materials in the world, and I want you to make an amazing house. Fine. So they go and they buy, he gives them the money to buy all the expensive materials. And what do? So like gold and silver, everything. He comes one fine day and he says, look, what's going on? They took the big gold sheets and they've chopped them into pieces. They took the wooden planks and cut them up. They took these big bricks and cut them down to size. He says, what are you doing to my gold and silver and bricks? You're damaging everything. He says, listen, how do you think you build a house? Like, I didn't know anything. He says, how do you build a house? We got to cut them down to make it. No, you use the gold the way it is. I don't want you damaging my gold. I don't want to see that anymore. And he goes away because he doesn't know what he's talking about. Okay, they keep cutting it up and separating this and that. He comes to the rest there. He says, they did more damage. So he says, that's it. You're fired. I'll get somebody else who'll do better. And I said, you're not going to find anybody who's going to do better. They left. And what happened? All he has is everything that's broken. Because he wouldn't want to wait till they would fix it. And that's the same thing over here. On a Kaddish Baruch Hu, the way the wheel works, the way the chariot goes, it goes through some places that are not so good till it gets to the final destination. And therefore, what Rabbi Akiva was saying is, he says, I understand what a chariot is. There is no evil in this world. A chariot, we have to move from place to place to place to place to place. And sometimes the places may not appear good. We realize it's only part of a circle, that only when you get to the end of the circle, you get to the end of the goal, then you see that everything, without getting to the other places, you couldn't get to that end. And therefore, I'm sure that when Hashem made me kicked out of the house, I knew that he was planning amazing things for me. I just didn't know what it was. But I knew he wouldn't do anything bad for me. Whenever he kept saying, this is great, this is great. So what is he doing? He's pumping the wheels. The wheels move. Hashem says, the wheels move with your bitachon. The wheels move with your bitachon. That's the way I made the system. If you believe what I'm doing is good, I'm going to continue to do good. Even though right now it's not good. But if you say what I'm doing is not good, then Hashem says, okay, then I'm not involved anymore. If you think I'm doing a bad job, I'll leave you in the middle. I'll leave you in the middle. And this is the challenge of Golus, and this is the challenge we have all the time in our lives. How do we deal with these situations? It's interesting. Look at source 18 from Rav Michal of Zlotchev. How do we define the word emunah? The word emunah is an expression of raising or drawing. As it says in the Megillah by Mordechai, it says, Vahi omein es hadasa. What does that mean? He raised her up. He raised her up. That's the word emunah. So what does that mean? Emunah raises things up.
Training.
With our emunah that a person trusts Hashem, it causes that the thing gets raised up. It gets developed. And Hashem finishes the circle.
Develop trust. Emun.
Emun is you're strengthening something. You raise a child.
Right.
A little baby grows up. So you're strengthening. You're raising. You're elevating. That's what emuna comes from, that word emun, to raise up. So when we have emuna, our emuna raises up what Hashem is planning to finish. It brings it from the state it's now to the most unbelievable state that it's supposed to reach. And that's where Rav Levi Yitzchak says, a person has to always, whatever happens, he has to accept all these things with simcha. Now, not a simcha jumping up and down for joy simcha, a simcha of knowing that the best thing is happening. When are you really happy? You're really happy when you know everything is exactly what it's supposed to be, right? What makes you happy? Everything's supposed to be is going to be. Well, if Hashem is making everything the way it's supposed to be, and you believe that's happening, then you're going to be b'simcha. Right? So now that we have all this, we can begin to understand what is going on over here. What's going on over here? Let's start to answer some of the questions. Zohar says there are different wagons. Right? There's the wagons that Yosef sent and the wagons that Paro sent. Yosef's wagons were from the side of holiness, and Paro's wagons were the side of impurity. What does that mean? It says, Paro's belief was that everything... Let's start with Yosef. Yosef's belief is whatever Hashem does, it's part of a wagon. Hashem is moving us like a Merkava from one place to another place, and he's going to take us to the best place. And just as I saw in my life, Hashem, as it were, took me on wagons. He took me through some very apparently bad places. But every one of those bad places had to be so that I could be in this very good place now. And I saw that. I may not have knew that originally, but now it's clear to me that I understand. And now that you're coming, I want you to be clear before you come down. So that's what he's trying to get Yaakov to understand. On the other hand, that's a holy wagon. A holy wagon understands that as the wagon's moving along, it's always in a good place. No, I say a Jew never gets lost. A Jew never gets lost. If you think you got lost, it's because you're supposed to be over there. It's not such a thing as a Jew getting lost. That's why it says by Hagar, it says she was lost. It's because she's talking not a Jew. Okay? You never get lost. I got lost. No, you didn't get lost. Hashem wanted you over there. You have to always remember that. But we planned on being at dinner at 6. No, Hashem wanted you to be over there. Because something over there has to happen. So you never get lost. So that's what Yosef's message. Paro then says, no. Things go naturally. They just go without any plans, and they just go, and things could be bad, and we could try to control it, but there's no God, there's no involvement in that. And that's what the Zohar is actually saying. And this is going to be the fight as the Jews are in Mitzrayim over here. So therefore, we see that this is a fight that goes for, it's starting now, but it keeps going on and on. And the way you survive is like David HaMelech said in Source 19. David HaMelech had a lot of tough things, but look what he says. Rabim machovim l'rasha. Many are the agonies of the wicked. Vaboteach b'Hashem, and the one who trusts Hashem. Look at the wording. Chesed yisovavenu. Kindness encircles him. What was he saying? The Rasha has lots of agonies. You know why? Because he's complaining. Why is this happening? Since you're complaining, okay, I won't be involved anymore. And just stick in the bad place you're at. But the tzaddik who has bitachon Hashem, baboteach b'Hashem, what happens? He makes the circle continue till things get to the place they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
So that's what Yosef understood, and he's trying to tell it to his father. Now you see what happens. This is the fight, really, although Yosef, initially, remember, Yosef had a different philosophy than Paro, but after all, he was the viceroy of Egypt, so the differences were more subtle. They couldn't be so pronounced as much later on after Yosef dies, everybody else dies, then you have a terrible Paro. But this Paro is the Paro right now. Don't make a mistake. You should know, right now, when the Jews are going down, Paro has one idea. Get them on the wagons of impurity now. That was Paro's goal. They're coming out of Mitzrayim. Get them in the impure wagons now, and that way there'll be nothing left of Jewish people. That was Paro's intent from the beginning. But he had to be subtle about it, because he's got Yosef, and he needs Yosef badly.
Right.
And Yosef's got to be subtle about it, too. Yosef, well, I don't want you guys to fall into the trap, Paro's. Paro tried to make me fall in that trap. When he said, oh, you're so smart, you're so this. I didn't go for anything. I said, it's always Hashem.
He didn't want to.
Yosef has lived with Paro already for 9 years. And Paro has a whole different philosophy, but Yosef didn't get trapped by him. He didn't let all this wealth get to his head. But after Yosef dies, and then the Jews do start assimilating, and then Paro shows his true colors. He says, "Who's Hashem Shalom?" But how does it turn out at the end? So at the end, the Jews go to the Yam Suf, and they leave Egypt. Look at the end. Look at the very end. Look what it says in Source 20. Egypt pursued and came after them, every horse of Paro. And look what it says. His chariots. What does it mean, it says? His unholy Merkava comes together, and his horsemen into the midst of the sea. And what does Hashem do? It happened in the morning watch that Hashem looked down at the camp of Egypt with a pillar of fire and a cloud, and he confounded the camp of Egypt. He removed the wheels of their chariots and caused them to drive with difficulty. Why does Torah keep talking about the wheels and the chariots? Because that's what it's all about. It's about the chariots. Paro is coming with the unholy chariots. Even at the end, he couldn't give in. Even at the end, he says, I'm going to still stop them. And that's what Hashem had to destroy his chariot. So that was the differences between them. So there's a great philosophical divide between Yosef and Paro. So now let's try to answer all the questions and see how everything fits in so nicely over here. So here's the deal. Paro's goal, when now that Paro realizes who Yosef really is, he's the son of Yaakov, and Yaakov represents the Jewish people. Paro, from day one, did not want any continuity of the Jewish people. And he figures it's a great opportunity. They're coming down to Egypt. Of course, they're my viceroy's family. I got to be nice to them. I'm going to be friendly to them. I'm going to be very cordial. But I want them to go down in wagons of Tumah, so that they'll slowly assimilate and there'll be nothing left of them. Yosef knew that. And that's why it said Paro sent for them with wagons. Paro sent the wagons. And he wants them to go with wagons of impurity. I'll explain how in a minute. And Yosef sends the very same wagons and makes sure they're wagons of purity. Now how's that going to happen? Well, let's go back and let's answer some of the questions. You see how everything falls into place real nicely. If you look back in source number 5, it says, and Paro said to Yosef, tell your brothers, do this, load up your beasts and rashes with grain. So they got all this grain. What are they going to do with all that grain when they take it to Eretz Canaan? What do they need so much grain for? So here's the point. Paro knew, remember, the idol of Egypt is the sheep. That's the idol. Mm-hmm. What do Egyptians not do? They do not want, they're not shepherds. That denigrates their idol. As we explained in the past, because sheep, why is sheep their idol? Because sheep are a bunch of followers. Right? Sheep are followers, and their idol worship was, you follow blindly. And therefore, what they hated was people were shepherds, because that goes against that idea. Shepherds mean we control the sheep.
That's right.
Instead of the sheep just going on their own. So therefore, he knew as long as they're going to be shepherds, they're going to cling to their religion. That's why it was an abominable thing in Egypt to have shepherds. But he knew they're shepherds. So what's he going to do? He's going to say, listen, guys, I'm sending lots of wheat. And you know what? Keep your stuff behind. Keep all your stuff behind. Keep your sheep behind. You're not going to need it. You're moving now to leaving the rural life of the shepherd. You're going to the modern metropolis urban life of Egypt. You'll make Parnassa in other ways. Forget about your sheep. If you look carefully, Paro tells them to come down with yourselves, with your family. He doesn't say come down with your animals. He doesn't want them to come with their animals. He wants to send the wagons with lots of grain. You know what? They're going to say, what are you going to do with our animals? Don't worry, just leave the grain for them. All that grain, the animals will live off the grain. So you don't have to worry about the animals. Take all that grain, leave it there, and they'll eat it there and stay there, and you come down without the animals. And now that you've given up your profession, we'll find another profession for you guys. And that's not a good profession for the Jews. You have to remember, the Jew must retain his Yiddishkeit. We're going through a difficult stretch now. This is not what appears to be a good stretch, but we have to go through this stretch. So Paro says, if I get rid of the sheep, and they're going to now follow and worship, and eventually his hope is, as long as you're shepherding, you're not going to bow down to that sheep. But if you're no longer a shepherd, then one day I'll get them to bow down to the sheep. One day. They'll bow down to the sheep. He wasn't expecting to convert them overnight. Start slowly. Bring them down without the sheep. Can I need a parnassa? Well, there's a lot of good jobs you can make, but not shepherding. Now, Yosef doesn't want that. Yosef wants them to come down with sheep. More than that, he wants them to be in a place where they're not going to assimilate, like Goshen, which is indeed far away from Egypt. And what's so good about Goshen? Goshen's far away from Egypt, a place where Jews could bring their sheep, herd their sheep, and the Egyptians won't see it. Whatever they won't see, it'll be like a sanctuary city, as it were. A sanctuary city, where you do whatever you want, but that's in Goshen, that's not here in Mitzrayim. So they'll be close enough, but not too close. They'll be far away enough, no one's going to see them shepherding. Yosef's goal was, they have to remember the holy chariot. They have to know the holy wagons. A holy wagon, a Jew goes down, and he's a place he doesn't want to be, but he has to set up his own infrastructure, have their own Jewish society. Everything has to be different. I don't want them to assimilate. So therefore, what's going on? Paro's saying, okay, guys, here's wagons. Take all this grain, and that grain you're going to use and leave it for your animals over there. Leave your animals behind. You come, start a new life in this new country. And you'll be part of, and we'll give you the best land, best property, right in downtown Alexandria, right on the Nile River. With all of us, you'll have the penthouse. And his whole hope is what? To get them to assimilate. Yosef understands good and well what Paro's doing, and he's got to subtly make that not happen. So he tells the brothers, when you come back, and look what he says to them. Yosef says to them, look in source 2. Again, back to source 2. If you notice everything now, he says, your son of the ghost, you shall be near me, you and your children, your grandchildren, and your flocks and your cattle and all that is yours. If you keep looking at the Sukkot, Paro never mentions bring your flocks and cattle. Yosef keeps saying bring your flocks and bring your cattle.
Which one?
Source 2. I bolded it.
Okay.
Your flocks and your cattle. Every time Yosef talks, he says bring your flocks and cattle. Every time Paro talks, bring you, your wife, your kids, not flocks and cattle. It's subtle. If you're not looking for it, you won't find it. So now there's a big difference in the wagon itself. Now, of course, so we ask the question, so how does Yaakov see anything with these wagons? Because Paro's sending the wagons too. Question is, what's in the wagons? Those wagons that Paro wants to send are wagons filled with grain. And Yaakov will see wagons filled with grain to the top, realizing that the grain is going to be for the animals, and they're going to keep the animals behind. Yosef tells him to send the wagons and send them without the grain. Just enough the animals could live. Send them without the grain. And without the grain, it means you're going to be taking the animals back with you. You see the difference? They both sent the same wagons, but they had different intentions with the wagons. What they were physically understanding was only mirroring what spiritually was going on. This was beauty of this, that you have the pshat and the sod melding together here. The pshat is, Paro says, fill the wagons with lots of grain, so you can just dump it there and leave it there and leave the animals there. Yosef says, no, let's send the wagons, but without the grain, because you're going to be bringing back the animals. So now, when Yaakov sees that, yes, they are the wagons that Paro sent, but when he sees these wagons, these are the ones that Yosef wanted. When he sees they're brimming, they don't have any grain in them, that means we're going to be taking our animals back with us. He understood that Yosef has got some plans over here. But what is he really seeing? He's seeing, what's the message of the wagons? The wagon that Yosef sends you says there's a Merkava Shlema we're trying to build. He's telling his father, Dad, it's a wagon. It's a Merkava. You think it's a bad situation? No, the wagon keeps moving. Hashem is spinning things. Hashem is turning everything. He's turning it, and it's going to be amazing for you, Dad. Don't worry about it. That's the message that Yosef is telling his father. And when his father got that message, he was revived. That was the revival. And then when the brothers come back, and now Paro's wondering, oh, what's this? They brought their cattle with them. Again, he can't be so overt over it. Brings their cattle. So Yosef says, now tell them, Paro's going to ask you, what do you do for a living? You tell them that you're herdsman, but not just your herdsman, but you're a herdsman. Your father was a herdsman. Your grandfather. This is what we do as Jews. This is all we do. We don't try to find us another job. This is what we are. This is what we are as Jews, and we're not going to give it up. And once that's the case, then Paro only has one option. He's got to keep you with the cattle. Where? In the land of Goshen. That they will not be close enough to the Egyptians to assimilate with them. So Paro was not able to do that yet. And Yosef was able to push that aside. And therefore, you see, the brothers can now live in the land of Goshen. Because Yosef now understood. And now what it means, you shall be near to me, means you'll be near to me spiritually. You're going to be in the land of Goshen, although you'll be far away from the Egyptians, but you'll be near to me. You'll be still remain from Jews. Now, I have to be in the middle of Egypt to do this. I have better talents than you have. You guys weren't built to be able to be in the middle of Egypt for this. So you're going to stay over there.
He has a good immunity.
But he understood more than this. Go back to the first source now. He says, don't be so sad and let it not show. For they sold me here, for it was to preserve life that God sent before me. What's that? To save your lives, mamish. Because you're going to starve to death. And then he said, God sent before you to make for you a remnant in the land and to preserve it for a great deliverance. It means for me to save your life spiritually. I have a double task. I have to give you grain. I have to make sure that you remain from Jews. And that's what Yosef understood was his goal the whole time. So this is the idea. I think we've answered. So now, one last thing. So what does Rav Levi Yitzchak mean? He says the cause of something is always circular. You see, it makes a lot of sense. We have to look at everything Hashem does as a circle. And the circle is always good when it comes to the end. When it comes to the end. Now, it's very interesting if you look based on... So, you see how this all fits in to finishing up the holiday of Hanukkah. We just finished Hanukkah. What was the whole fight against the Greeks? The Greeks said, how do you look at the world? The world is science. There's science that moves everything. And the world just doesn't have any... There's good things, there's bad things, and what's bad is bad. There's no God who runs things. Forget about that. And they didn't have to fight through that. They had to fight through this terrible times of the Greeks. And they had a emuna that it was going to work out. But more than that, and this is the real... where the battle is won or lost. The real problem is, when we're going through difficult times, is to mamish have this emuna that it is the most amazing thing. And to realize it's not just a nice thing, because really you could ask yourself the question, you know, there's a question to ask, okay, let's say I know it's going to be the best. But who says, but even if I don't believe it, it should happen anyway. If Hashem is making it be good, What does it matter if I believe it's going to be good or not? Isn't Hashem going to make it good anyway? The answer is no. Hashem makes it that you have to be part of it. Hashem has this circle, and his goal is going to be good. But he requires something from you. He requires you with your emunah. That keeps the circle going. That keeps the wheels moving. If you want to grease the wheels, emunah greases the wheels. And that's why Hashem set it up. And if you don't have emunah, it stops in its place. It's not so to say, oh, everything Hashem does for the best, if I believe it or not, it's going to be what he wants anyway. No, it's going to be what you believe in. If you believe this is bad, then Hashem says, going to leave it like that. We're going to stop it right in the middle of the job. It's like you're telling me, stop doing what you're doing. Hashem says, either it's one way or the other. You can't have it both ways. You're going to say, Hashem, what you're doing is good, or Hashem, what you're doing is not good. You can't say, I don't know.
What's the number again?
What do you mean, what's the number?
What minute?
1 hour, exactly. Right? But you can't say, I don't know, whatever it is going to be. No, you have to say, this is leading to something very good. And if you don't say that, that stops the wheels in their track. And if you believe this is going to be amazing, that pushes the wheel further. That pushes it. And that was so critical. Yaakov's going to Egypt. What if Yaakov say, oh, this, I don't like this. What happened? The Jews would remain in Egypt and they'd never get out. They'd say, no, this is also an important thing. This is also going to work out. It's also going to be very good. And that's what Yosef was showing him. The wagons that keep rolling around. Yaakov, my dear father, keep the wagons rolling. And since he did, next week's parsha is Vayechi. Vayechi, and he came to life. The best years of Yaakov's life were the last 17 years. We were able to accept that the wheels, even in Egypt, can be the most amazing things. Where till now he was struggling with this idea. Yosef, help him understand this idea. With this, you explain one last thing, one last beautiful thing. We'll end with this. Gemara says, source 21, in the days to come, the Holy and Blessed Be He will hold a circle for the righteous and will sit in their midst in the Garden of Eden, and every one of them will point with his finger towards him and say, Zeh Hashem kivinu lo. This is the God whom I've waited for. This is the God I waited for. We'll be glad and rejoice together. Why have to be in a circle? With Hashem in the middle. The answer is obvious.
Never stop.
The circle finally came to the conclusion. When Mashiach comes, the circle's full circle. And the Jew says, that's what I was waiting for. Now Hashem's in the middle of the circle. Hashem makes the circle. Right? And he says, that's the difference between the letters Samach and Nun. The letter, look at 25, I'm skipping. Rabbanei Yisrael says, Nun stands for Nefila. Nun means falling. Samach is Smicha, support. But look at the letters. Look at a Nun. What does a Nun look like and what does a Samach look like?
Circle.
A Samach is a circle.
Right.
A Nun is a half circle. When a person only looks at the half circle and says, I don't like it at the half point, then you fall.
It's open.
But when you know it's a whole circle, then you know what? You're not going to fall. And that's really what a nes is. A nes, take Nun and Samach and put it together, where it looks like it's going to fall, but it's not going to fall. And that's a very difficult thing to do. And then when the Jews were going to Egypt, this could have been a place where they could have fallen. They could have mamish fallen. And Paro was setting it up, they should all fall. And come onto my wagon. Go onto my wagon of impurity. And forget about Hashem, and he doesn't run the world. And, you know, no emunah, no this. Just become businessmen and this and that. And slowly I'll suck it all out of you. To that, Yosef says, not going to be. And therefore we have to have emunah that this is the most amazing thing that's happening now. And you have to be, we're so fortunate, you know what? And the question now is, so how do we know how to look at things? Last point. How do you know when you're going through a certain time? How do you know how to look at things? So the Gemara in Source 26 says, on the Pasuk at the end of the Teicha, when all the bad things will happen to us, the Source says terrible things. At the end he says, after all said and done, I'm not going to reject you. I'm not going to despise you. I'm not going to be loath to me. Look how the Gemara understands this. Last source. I've not rejected them in the days of the Chaldeans. That's one Golos. Because who am I going to bring up? When I raise them, Daniel. During the Golos of Bavel, there was a Daniel. Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, next part of the puzzle. Neither did I abhor them in the days of the Greeks, when I raised up Shimon HaTzadik, the Chashmonaim, the sons of Matasyo. I will not allow them to destroy them utterly in the days of Haman, when I raised up them Mordechai and Esther. I will not allow them to break my covenant in the days of the Persian, when I raised them up from members of the house of Rebbe and the sages of various generations. What's the Gemara saying? No matter how bad the times are, no matter how terrible, I always bring you a tzaddik. I always bring you a tzaddik who the tzaddik will show you this is not the end. This is just the next step, and you have to follow what the tzaddik says. And that's why it's so important to follow the instructions of the Gedolim, what the Gedolim tell us to do when we're going through difficult stages. And they're saying, this is the challenge that you have, and this is part of the circle where we have to succeed here, and this is also good if we succeed properly. And that's why you see what happened. Yosef, he brings them down, and a number of things happen. Number one, he makes sure that they're in Goshen. He makes sure that they're still shepherds. And what does Yaakov do? He sends Yehuda ahead to build a yeshiva first. All these things to stay on the wagon, to say, although this is not the way I plan things, we're going to make the best of it, because that, and we have a muna that it's going to be good. And as long as they had that, they were successful. Unfortunately, in Sefer Shmos, they lose that emunah and they run into trouble. Just close with one last story with Rav Moshe Feinstein. It just shows you have to believe tzaddikim. There's once a Malshin, a informer, really bad guy, and he informed to many Jews to the KGB. Rav Moshe, when he was a young rabbi in Luban, was a city in Russia. So when the guy was Jewish, but he was a terrible guy. Anyway, he died. Baruch Hashem, the guy died. But he left the following instructions. He said, I make in my will that I should be buried. When you lay me in the ground, bury me face down. Now, according to Jewish law, you don't bury somebody face down. It's always face up. Always face up, not face down. But that's what he insisted on. So they went to Rav Moshe, who was the rabbi of the city, and they said, Rebbe, he insists to be buried face down, and isn't there a rule that you have to listen to what the dead man tells you to do? So Moshe thought about it. He says, there might be such a law, but there's no such thing that a Jew is not buried face up. So he said, you're going to bury him face up. And the family was upset. What are you talking about? He gets his last request. It doesn't matter. Face up. They bury him face up. 4 hours later, the funeral's over. Rabbis and the Chevra Kedisha come running to Rav Moshe. They're like in shock. He says, how did you know? He said, what? He says, as soon as we were laying his body down in the ground, and it was down in the ground, all of a sudden KGB agents came to the funeral. And they told us to move the cover. They didn't have coffins in those days. Move the cover. And they saw the face was up. And they walked away, didn't say anything. They found out that what this man was planning, he said, this guy was a rush to the very end. He said, as he's about, before he's dying, he called in the KGB. He says, I just want you to know how much the Jews hate you. They hate you so much, and they know that I have connections with you. They're going to purposely bury me with my face down to insult me, and they're insulting Russia and the KGB. You should know how terrible they are.
Wow.
And he didn't tell that to anybody else. Had they listened to him and buried him face down, then who knows what kind of pogrom would have happened. But Moshe said, you're going to bury him face up. They came and said, no, I guess they don't hate you so much. They avoided a pogrom. So he says, that's why you have to have Gedolim, who know exactly what to do to keep you through these difficult times and to keep the Emunah strong. Okay, excellent.